Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Success leaves footprints, and that is good because most of the history that we have learned and discussed has left out very, very important and fundamental facts. I think some of it is because we can date much of this back to the days of slavery, wanting to protect people, and a mentality that maintains itself up until today. What we see and what we're focusing on this month, now I want you to understand and appreciate the fact that we normally post weekly, and we try to look at the entire experience of Black life. And this is not a program only for people of color, Black people, or any other specific people. It is a program to allow expanded knowledge. Expanded knowledge so that we can see the full picture of what we're facing. We are facing a difficult period in life in America. And many times it is unknown, uncovered, because it is not mentioned in the media. And so what we've done is we've looked at some of these, and there is an effect on life. It is effect on the outlook of people, both Black and white. We are not seeking to blame any person other than the actual person involved in some of these things. Some were leaders, some were there mentally because of peer pressure, mob violence, or whatever. But as we look back over our history, it is necessary, it is essential that we know the facts. We often hear that if we don't know our past, we're destined to repeat it. Most of us don't know our past. And I'm speaking of everybody, because I was dismayed to find out it was not something that was singled out and one group knew and the other did not. None of us were given the information. And I find that when I did find out that the truth had been withheld from me, I don't know how I felt. I was exhilarated on one hand because I found out that contrary to what I had been led to believe, that all Black people were in the South picking cotton, nothing else. Slaves, happily entertaining master, with no ideals of ever being free, of ever even wanting to be free, of ever being able to be free in terms of making decisions on their own, in terms of making progress. This is what I had been led to believe. And it was shameful. It was embarrassing to find out that at my age, very mature male, college educated, that I didn't know anything, at least in this area. We sometimes measure intelligence incorrectly because many times it is what we are exposed to that gives us this first impression, gives us the ability to be believed, to be accepted. If you are never given the opportunity, you cannot normally take advantage of the opportunity. We see laws that were made for the express and intent of keeping Black people from being able to learn to read and write. Basic fundamentals. In fact, one of my pet projects, but it's been put on the back burner, is making sure that our youth and others know how to read. It is so fundamental. It brings joy to us when we're able to read materials about areas of our interest, whether that be fishing, hunting, developing aeronautical engineering, or whatever. That allows us to keep fresh on the latest developments. It allows us to expand our basic knowledge, and I encourage people to do that. So we're talking about an area that sounds totally depressing. And in many ways, the fact that it even happened should be depressing. But my little effort, or my effort, I shouldn't diminish it either, is to make sure that we understand what's going on. I think that one of the reasons that we were not taught to read and write is because there was a group of people, not necessarily individuals, that understood if we learned to write, calculate, that many things would change that had been allowed to exist. One, we could find out about our heritage. I was brought up to believe almost that it was shameful to have African ancestry until I began to dig into the problem and find out the facts. There is an opportunity that even during this program that we can discuss those facts. Many of you are listening to us because you're using the link, and I love you for it, because you are enriching yourself, getting additional information. The one fault to that is that I cannot see you on my dashboard. The only reason that you would want to come in on the dashboard is because I can see you, I can open your microphone, you can talk, and all of us can hear. We can respond, and we do respond to comments, suggestions, criticism. Do this in order to better ourselves, in order to better understand the resistance, to better meet the needs of people that may be listening. And I want you to do that because I very much appreciate the fact that we are able to do this discussion. I was speaking last night, and to those of you that were up early this morning, I was on station WABB out of Anderson, South Carolina, with the Reverend Ted Lewis. And we will be back on again later this month. And my mission, my personal mission, information, to stimulate conversation, because one of the items that I discussed last night, and we had a very good question and answer session afterwards, is that we get a splinter in our finger. We think it's nothing. But most of us at some point have ignored that splinter, not realizing that that injury can fester. It can result in the loss of a finger, loss of a hand, loss of a limb, even loss of life if left unattended. And this is what we're doing. We're sitting here as mature adults, and I do hope that there are a number of children listening, because we have to discuss this. If we don't, we allow it to fester. We allow it to grow into something much worse than it ever needed to be. And we find this is true. One of the tenets and one of the things that has held us back is from an early age, we are taught not to discuss race, not to who discuss race. And I think some of this comes down to the fact that we don't know how to discuss it. And I'm not just talking about one side in this particular thing, because there's enough blame to go around from everyone. Why would you not want people to read and write? It's a basic fundamental. And it basically is what has allowed this country to prosper. Well, when we go into sharecropping, if you could not figure, you're always going to come out on the losing end of that situation. And that's exactly what we saw. There were contracts that basically extended slavery because you could not calculate, you could not question what happened. You had a bad year. You remain in debt, and you're on someone else's property. You don't have your own property. You can't even purchase your property. You can't purchase property because you don't have money. The next year, you have a bumper crop. But because of debt and the inability to calculate, we are essentially held hostage. We are held hostage. This is slavery by another name. Yeah, it looks good on paper. There's a contract that said you can benefit. But when you don't have access to the fundamental tools, you have nothing. Nothing. When we talk about the horrible conditions of slavery, who's going to listen if they think that you are not intelligent enough to express yourself clearly? This is one of the reasons that it has not happened. You don't find on the books laws preventing a person to teach a dog to read or write, nor a hippopotamus or any other creature. Why? Because to the best of my knowledge, they can't. But to those who can, those who could not see the future and understand that the future would be brighter for everyone if this basic skill was allowed into the system of everyone. I didn't find out, about the difference between the schools. I did it much earlier than most because I was able to go into schools as a craftsman and see what was going on. I saw things there that absolutely blew my mind. Supposedly, separate but equal was established in 1954 in the Brown v. Board ruling, but it was very slow to come. Because in many places, it was 20 years before the initial steps were taken. 20 years after the Supreme Court said you must do it, and you must do it with all deliberate speed. People drugged their foot. They were able to get away with not reacting, not responding. And so what difference did it make if I was in school A or school B? It makes a difference if school B receives, anywhere from 2 to 10 times as much funding. And I saw it. I saw it on a daily basis. Because school B got new books. School A got hand-me-down books. Sometimes those that came from school B littered with filth, verbal abuse, words of derogatory nature in the books that you were given to study from. This has a lasting impact, folks. And so what we're looking at this month is the race riots, massacres, and other incidents that were designed to keep people down. And why is that important? Because we often buy into the story that every American had the same opportunity, that everybody else did, which is not, I repeat, not, N-O-T, capitalize it, N-O-T, true. And what this has done is it has impacted an entire race, not for a generation, but for generations, okay? It was happening when my father was in school. It was happening when his father was in school. We sometimes hear people speak and think they're unintelligent because they're not speaking, quote, the King's English. But we look back often at why many people were imported into America. More were imported into South and Central America than there were even here. But we find that when they came here, they were speaking fluently their own language. When I went to South Africa, spent time there, I never once stayed in a hotel because I was staying with people that I knew, people that I appreciated. And what I found out was so very impressive. It was impressive because, one, when you knew a person, and we often see this, we sometimes listen to them, but I was unable to follow the conversation. Why? Because when there were three or four people around, or as we had a braai, which is basically a barbecue, and people would come, and you're standing around in a group, and people are talking, which I love. But we start in English. Suddenly, we're speaking another language. And unbeknownst to me, because I didn't realize this at the time, is we would change to a third, fourth, or fifth language. But people were able to be there because they understood languages, understood completely. Many times when slaves would escape in this country, people wanting them back would put basically a resume up of a description and what they could do. Because often we were looking for polyglots. And a polyglot is nothing more than a person that speaks several languages. And many of these escaped people spoke several languages fluently. And I'm not necessarily talking about African languages. We had French. We had Spanish. We had German. We had other languages around because slave owners were not all English people, English-speaking people. And so you may be with a German family for whatever period of time, and under the system of slavery, you could be sold. Your next owner may be a French or Spanish language, English even. But when we go back and look and we hear some of the speech patterns, we think and chalk it up to the fact that this is an unintelligent person. But I want you to understand, particularly in the Gullah and Geech cultures, as a kid coming along, we would hear somebody speak in that particular sound, dialect, whatever you want to call it, and make fun because it was not, quote, the King's English. But as we become more sophisticated and can go back and look at how these patterns come along, we find that they are following patterns of languages in Africa. We haven't taken the time, the effort, or given them the opportunity to learn the King's English. And yet we are going to criticize people for not knowing. We also do not give them credit where credit is due. We find that over 50% of the gross national product of the entire country came at the price of the backs of slaves. The value of the slaves in the South was more than all of the factories and railroads in the entire country. 52% or more of the entire gross national product came on the backs of slaves. Start with some discussion on the New York draft riots. Many of you people did not know of this riot. I believe it occurred about 1863. And what was it over? It was over, in essence, the Civil War. What happened is the United States of America is in a battle with another country, the Confederated States of America. Countries had presidents, vice presidents, and constitutions constituting a complete nation. While we say that it was a war between the states, understand that Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri, all slave states that did not join the Confederacy. So we had slave states still in America. While one of the primary tenets of the Civil War was a fight of slavery, that was not Lincoln's intent. While he had some abolitionist tendencies, his major goal was to unite the United States back together, because he understood from great minds, great books, even religious teachings that says a house divided will not stand. So what did we have prior to the Civil War? We had a house that was divided, divided over the issue of slavery. And when we are given this information, it makes us seem as if every single person in the South was in favor of slavery. And it was not. There were bastions of freedom. There were people that did not believe in slavery system, even in the South. There were people in the North that did believe. So we're starting off seeing how history has been construed in such a manner as to give an unfair picture. Many of my white friends are carrying around a burden that I wish they did not have to carry around. Because when the subject comes to race, they are feeling guilt because of their whiteness. They are feeling that if they look back into their ancestry, that they're going to find a slave owner. Sure. But what we need to understand is, even if your ancestor was a slave owner, it is still not too late to make sure that you didn't follow that path. Maybe that is your desire to follow that path. That's fine, because my judgments are based on what we do today. We talked about Plessy v. Ferguson, and there are continuing discussion today among the best legal minds in the field. Was this the worst decision ever decided by the Supreme Court? Because it basically said that there is no right that a black has that needs to be respected by white people. Now, that even sounds strange to most of us today. But that was the court's determination. Although everything was backward and convoluted at that point, it went backwards at that point. What I'm going to tell you now, in contrast to Plessy v. Ferguson was the judge that handed down the ruling It said blacks have absolutely no rights, essentially. Is now we have Plessy and Ferguson, the descendants of Plessy, the descendants of Ferguson, are working together to do what they can, these changes. Plessy and Ferguson. This is where I develop much of my attitude. I don't want to be opposed to you. I don't want you to go around feeling guilt for something that you personally did not do. But I do solicit your assistance in, one, getting the word out, and two, let's get together, have a mature adult conversation, and talk about it. I don't blame every white person. And there is some blame that needs to be shared among my community. Have we done everything that we can to make changes? Or have we just sat under the tree and talked about how unfair it is? Is that what we are doing? As I spoke last night, I encourage people to bring up their questions, their comments, and open, honest question and answer period. The audience was black and white and some other races also. It was small enough to have that intimate feel, but it was large enough that we were diversified. And so I had a black gentleman disagree because he said we've not made progress, that professional sports are slavery. Couldn't completely disagree with him because we look at National Football League. There are no black owners, as far as I know. We have a dearth of coaches, head coaches, and even other tiers that ultimately would fill coaching position. So is there a problem there? Yes. I was speaking from the standpoint that we are now at a point where two of the best teams in the league are black. Because I remember a period of time when even the most promising of black players, black quarterbacks, for example, were not put in the quarterback position because of the myth that no white man would ever take any order against from a black man. But we've seen it over and over. We've also seen what happens. And let me give you this situation because we're talking about football. The first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl was Doug Williams. Doug Williams played for the Washington Redskins. And I have somewhat of a problem with them because of their history in terms of race. But that aside, he won the Super Bowl. Prior to that, he had played at Tampa Bay. And as the starting quarterback for Tampa Bay with a winning record, he was paid less than most of the backup quarterbacks for every team in the league. So I love it when we have moved up a notch. Do I think we should have moved up more? Yes, absolutely. I have no problem with that. Are we moving fast enough? Not for me. But I want to bring to you the attention of the New York riots because they were soliciting black people, they were soliciting white people to go to war, fighting for the end of slavery. Why did the white people get mad? Because black people were exempt. Why were black people exempt? Because they had not been bestowed citizenship. Were they willing to fight? Yes. Yes. Many have seen the movie Glory with Denzel Washington. As these black troops went to Fort Sumter and fought so bravely those of us in South Carolina are often in the dark that there is a mass grave to the Massachusetts 55th. Before I go into that, I want you to know something. Because of the way the military is construed, the Massachusetts 54th was not made of all people from Massachusetts. We look at the 36th colored troop out of the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And North Carolina had a split personality because those slaves in the Outer Banks would frequently tell people on the mainland, if you want to be free, come out here. This is a place where you can experience freedom. The Outer Banks of North Carolina, not that far from us. And they folded into the Massachusetts 54. So many black people were willing to fight to their death, to put that on the line so that they and their relatives and their friends and people like them could experience freedom. Precious. And so what occurred, there were black people basically clawing at the bit, clamping at the bit to join. But they said, no, it's a white man's war. Those white people that had to go and leave black people behind, black people willing to fight, didn't like it. And this led to the riot. This led to a riot, and I can understand it. I believe last week or the week before, we talked about the riots in Omaha and what caused them. When soldiers had gone to war, these meat packers, these are the rich people. These are what we consider the powerful people, encouraged black people to come because there were jobs, and then put fear into white people. The reason they weren't going to have jobs is because of the black people. What is that designed to do? Not only put fear in the white people, but to have those people and the black people at war with each other, at odds with each other. I don't blame the white people for fearing the loss of their job, but I do blame those white people who knowingly set this up, who knowingly set this up. And it did not last for a generation. It persists even today. Who knew? And let me tell you this, and hopefully it's a shocking thing. New York seriously considered seceding from the Union and joining the South. Why? Because so much of the economy of New York was based on the product of the South. We sometimes don't understand that many of these northern communities were flourishing because of what they did. We had in the New England states, they were building ships, ships to go across the Atlantic, pick up people who were then brought back and enslaved. They were making garments. Not only that, insurance companies and some of our larger financial institutions made tons of money off of the slave trade. Some of them are on the top list of money-earning companies, even today. But we don't look at it because we're not told that. So this is a surprise. It's not as simple as we have been portrayed for it to be. And I want you to understand that there were four states that were slave-owning states that did not secede. But yet we are faced with a South in which we, every turn we make, we're looking up the rear end of somebody's horse who fought the United States. They are revered. Why? Because the history is being told by the losers of that war. We don't have enough people that will learn our history, learn our courage, and set the record straight. We're not changing history, but we can go back and do research. Lerone Bennett's book, Before the Mayflower, takes our history way, way, way back. There are evidences that when Columbus reached the shores, and he never set foot in North America, never, but we honor him. When we talk about the Hamburg massacre in South Carolina, we had men that were willing to vote, who wanted to vote. They went to the courthouse to vote. Well over 100 men in that building. And what happened? Ex-Confederates came out with cannons and every weapon imaginable and fired on them. They even threatened a black man and made him go into the building with a burning rag, which set the building on fire. Imagine you're in a building. It's on fire. You have white flags. You bring out the flag symbolizing surrender. The white people outside mowed them down. They either shot and killed them or they lynched them for wanting to exercise their right to vote. One of the things that absolutely galls me is when we see our people, people that look like me, who don't want to even get up and go down and vote. When we look at what we are doing even today, Tuesday was selected, I think it's Tuesday or Thursday. Anyway, that day was selected because it was convenient for those people to travel and vote, for white people to travel and vote. But what we see is that no consideration was made to black people. Black people didn't have any day of the middle of the week off. It was always working, generally 6 days. And Sunday was the only day that they could exercise or enjoy any freedom. Many people, as a result of that, go to church. And that developed into souls to the polls. Black people went to church, and then they went and voted. It is a sophisticated tactic then to say, well, let's cut out Sunday voting. In other words, and what the true intent has shown itself to be, is let's find a way to make sure those people don't vote. They don't exercise their right. They don't have their right. Now, we look back at Hamburg, South Carolina, and what happened? I think over 100 people were killed. Finally, they erect a monument. But who is honored in that monument? Three people are honored with that monument. Three. How do you pick three out of 100? Well, one, you exclude the 100 that lost their life and honor those who took their lives. You heard me correctly. We don't honor those people who are fighting for the privilege that we say we hold so dear. They honor those people who were opposed to it. Is that what you see and stand for your country? That it isn't. I hope that that's not it. You are entitled to your opinion. I don't have to share it, but we can still live peacefully. And that is the point. While we avoid subjects of race, my wife and I were discussing a friend of ours that happens to work with her, and he was telling her an experience that embarrassed him beyond belief. He had his son with him. They went shopping. And the son asked this man, why do you have on gloves? Man didn't have on gloves. His hands were black. His father was embarrassed. We learn that you don't talk about the subject of sex, of race, no matter the circumstances. Do not talk about race. This is a question that many of us have. Why do we not talk about race? We're taught that from an early age. Don't mention race. The natural curiosity, and that black kids that have asked the same question, why does this person have this or that? We're not genealogists, but it is based in some of the sciences because of our ancestors. That may be enough to satisfy. But when you yell at that kid, when you take action to show hostility, it moves then to another generation. That, no matter how subtle, is magnified. And what happens? It gets passed to the next generation. Again, it may not be intentional. Sometimes we don't realize what's happening. Sometimes we're completely innocent of what has caused this to happen. But we find ourselves in an area where we are blissfully ignorant. And some of us realize this and want to stay there. Because at that point, you don't have to do anything. Or you can feign the fact that, oh, I didn't know. Which both are not necessarily true. We need to get to a point where we can talk about those situations. Remember we talked about that splinter? I had at one point a BB in my finger. And I didn't tell my parents. The reason I didn't tell them is because I didn't want to lose my BB gun. My fear was that they would take action, jump up and down, get mad, and take one of my favorite toys away. I was using it irresponsibly. But concealing it, like the splinter that we talked about, almost cost me a finger, which could have cost me a hand, an arm, or even my entire life. We allow ourselves to be intimidated by the subject of race. Intimidated is something we can change. Why don't we talk about this? You are embarrassed. But you are shutting down a kid. You're shutting down an inquisitive mind. As we go through life, we have a choice. Remain blissfully ignorant, even if it's by choice. Now, as we look at this, we develop into camps. I look at Florida. Florida is saying, do not tell me or my child the truth, because it may be uncomfortable. It may be uncomfortable. It's okay to lie to them. It's okay to hold back facts, but I belong to group two. Tell me the facts. Let me know, no matter how bad it is. And maybe, just maybe, as we look at this, what are the benefits to doing this? In my case, it was the fact that I had my fingers, I had a certain degree of liberty, and the same thing in real life. If I were on a football team and the quarterback signs an agreement with the owner, you cannot praise anybody on this team except me. You can only praise me, nobody else. You have linemen, the best in the game. This is where I think football takes place. These are the people that get dirty. These are the people that get mud on their jersey. These are the people that make contact every time. These are the people that come through that line because they have put all out to get you. These are the people that make the holes so that your ball carriers can go through. But you don't mention and glorify the entire team, because everybody has a role. Everybody is doing things to make this team function. You've seen the discussion prior to the game. Oh, they have no defense. They have no offense. It's a well-balanced team. They've got everybody out there fighting for this glory. Which would you want to be on? I'm going to tell you something else to consider. That team, no matter how good, what's going to happen? People are going to feel that they are not part of the team. You don't get full production out of them. And in some cases, it's completely forced. Completely forced. In order for all of us to benefit, we all need to have the opportunities to do the best that we can. My hope, we have young people listening, because my hope lies in you, because you are going to be the generation that comes along and solves one of our dreadest problems, and that is Alzheimer's, aging, and other diseases that affect us. Right now, we have the oldest living president ever in hospice. Decision that he made. He is at peace with it. Family is at peace with it. In case you don't know who I'm talking about, Jimmy Carter is in hospice. Hospice usually cares for you in your final period of life. He's aware of it. He has made the decision to get off treatment. I think it's a responsible decision that he has made, and something that, if regardless of how we feel about it, is going to face all of us at some point. When I was young and did even more foolish things than I do now, death was not what scared me. What scared me was that twilight zone between life and death. When I'm just there, I cannot make decisions. I cannot use my mind. And so we have set people up into that twilight zone. If I don't provide the youth of today so that they can become the greatest that they can be, I'm also denying myself. I'm denying myself of opportunities. I'm denying myself of the best. When it comes to school levies, for example, when my kids were there, yeah, let's do it. Now my decision is more factually based. Is it something that's going to benefit the entire community? Not that benefiting the children is not that, but I look at it from that standpoint. I don't care what color people are. Could bother me less. At one time, I was caught in this. I'll tell you a brief story. At one time in my life, I got one of the whippings that I will never forget. Had a young lady in the neighborhood I thought was cute. I thought she was my girlfriend. Now, I'm only in the elementary school, but I called her black. And in those days, black was an insult. I didn't realize it. We had chickens in our backyard, even though we were in the city, it was allowed. And something happened. And my mother asked me which one. I ain't going to call this chicken black because I just got my butt beat for calling somebody black. I'm too young to differentiate between a human being and a chicken. That message came across. Fortunately, during my life, I got to a point where I recognized that the color of a person's skin was not revealing that true person, the body, the soul, the mind, the intent, the goodness within. That's where we need to be. We still have people that want to pick a mate with blonde hair, blue eyes, green eyes, red hair, whatever. And I see that and I understand the attraction. But in that process, I think we miss a lot of people. And I'm not promoting something that, other than the words that I just uttered, nothing else, because it's an individual thing. I used to laugh at people. And I was working with a guy one day, and he sees two people walking down the street. There's probably 6-8 feet between them. And he said, "Don't that make you mad?" "What? Two people walking down the street?" He was focused on what these people, one white, one black. One white, one black. My concern is if they were together, and I don't know that they are, do they have the same religious beliefs? Do they have the same beliefs on child care? Do they have the same beliefs on other things in life? In other words, I don't care about skin color. What I care about is your belief system. Do you both believe in the same things? Are you mated otherwise? When I look back at the case of, oh my gosh, I'm going into a blank, William and Croft, yeah. This was a husband and wife who escaped slavery in a very unique way. We don't often realize it, but Ellen Craft was very, very fair and could pass for white, although she is black. William, her husband, dark. So they concocted an escape plan. What was that plan? Ellen would pretend to be a man. The woman pretended to be a man with her servant, her manservant, which was actually her husband, taking care of her. She wore dark glasses. She had an arm in a sling, so she couldn't sign anything and give away her identity that way. They had a bandage, so it appeared as if she had some oral problems. They managed to escape because everybody assumes that what they see is actually what's there. Wasn't so. If you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, we've got close to 300 posts. There is a post there about this. And I don't just give you a few words. I try to round the experience off. One, because people learn in different ways. Some people absorb everything they want to through reading. But I think the experience is enhanced because we have videos there. And there are people that want to know more than what we have there. So we have books. Now, we support ourselves by partnering with other companies. So you'll see links to different products. And it's not necessary that you buy that product, but it is important to use that link. Because this agreement says with the partner that we will give you a small royalty in exchange for sending customers to us who buy. So we do that. We're looking to expand that list of partners. But you're not making us rich because the money that we do get does not come out of your pocket. So if you shop Amazon, for example, use one of our links every time. If you're concerned that you're buying something that you don't want, on that page is a cart. If there is a product in it, click it, and it will ask if you want to delete it. Say yes. If you go in with a link on tennis shoes, for example, and you want to buy a refrigerator and don't want the shoes, click, get rid of them. I don't mind. I want to become a habit because I think we provide value to our community, and I want to continue that work. So what we get there, we finance the work. It takes a lot of work to do this. This month, we are posting every day. That's 28 days. Now, I've got a decision to make. Maybe I can hear from some of you, because this is not just a monologue. I want it to be a dialogue. I want it to be so that you can ask questions. When you go to the site, AmazingBlackHistory.com, you will see a link that said, contact us. Give us this information. I had intended next month to do 31 days of black women that we should all know. We did this last year. But I find out that while March is Women's History Month or Women's Month, I believe April is International Black Women's Month. My dilemma, should I post in March or April? I want you to understand the language. I want you to understand what we are doing here. We are not trying to put one group over another. We're just saying that we're as good as any other people. Give us the chance. Give us the opportunity. Benefit from the opportunity that we have to make this world better. When we look at people like Daniel Hale Williams, Daniel Hale Williams was a physician. He had a patient who was stabbed in the heart. The man was still living. He went in and repaired a human heart, successfully repaired a human heart, and this man lived for decades. Anybody could benefit from the knowledge that came there. He is not the only person. There are people today who benefit because of Dr. Charles Drew. Dr. Charles Drew, we were losing people during World War II. And when we finally focused on what the problem was, they were going into shock and dying on the battlefield because they did not have blood. They did not have plasma. He developed the blood bank. He was in cahoots, or not cahoots, because that kind of makes it a little bit underhanded. But he worked with the American Red Cross, but left the organization because they insisted on something that was wasteful, non-productive, and somewhat hateful. They wanted to have two blood banks. We have survived these days with one, because it had nothing to do with the origin. What it had to do with was blood type, making sure that people got the right type. We all benefit from this factor. Prior to that, if you had gone down to donate blood, no, don't want your blood because you're black. Fit to save a white man's life, don't care, let him die. We don't want yours. Now, some of us can see the hypocrisy in that. It may take some of us longer to develop that. Now, we're coming to the point in the program where I'm going to shortly be opening the microphones. I'm opening the microphone so that we can have that question. Last night, one of the questions that came up, and I appreciated the fact that it even came up. Young people, pardon the language, but I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to let you know what happened. This person told me, and I've heard this all of my life, that the word picnic meant hang a Negro, lynch a Negro. That's not where it came from. I did the research, and I have to go back and dig that up. But I think it is French, means something completely different. Well, how does that persist? It persists because it is believable. We see situations now, or we went through situations. I experienced going through that said, and I was born in the Spartanburg Regional Colored Hospital. We couldn't go to the white hospital. Do you think they were going to spend equally on the black as the white? No. I came up under a system designed to make me a second-class citizen in everything that I did. When I went into department stores downtown, they had two water fountains. Most of them didn't want to put in two water fountains. But as you saw in the movie, the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. And when I saw this simple act, I actually cried. I'm a man. We don't show emotion, do we? But I knew the struggle that it took just to take a drink out of a white water fountain, because I faced similar situations in my lifetime. But I don't want my children or my grandchildren or anybody in the line to face those problems. I don't want that to happen to your children. I don't want your children feeling guilty because they did it and find out later why. We can extract ourselves from this situation, and we do that with knowledge. We hope that this program provides you with that knowledge, that insight. As we get ready to open the microphones, let me tell you, if you're in on a link through the internet, on your cell phone, or whatever, you do not have to change, because you'll hear everything. Even if you switch over, you will continue to hear everything. But I get to see your microphone, and I can open it. We can respond to you. The gentleman last night that wanted to tell me that we've not made any progress because we don't have a black football team owned, well, that we don't have a team owned by black people. I enjoyed the discussion that we had talking about that. And I wish that we had more time, because we could talk about what needs to be done to end such practices. In 1947, Jackie Robinson joined the major leagues. I didn't at that time, but as I look back, I think it may have been better if the white players had joined the Negro Leagues. Why? Because the Negro Leagues were entertaining. Entertaining. I saw a person that should be recognized by history. Peanut Johnson, one of the greatest pitchers in the Negro Leagues. And understand, the Negro Leagues had some of the best players. Jackie Robinson was not the best player into the major leagues, but he was the best choice for that, because Jackie Robinson could have some semblance of stability doing all of the, I'm trying to think of a clean word, all of the stuff that he had to contend with. What you may not know is that when Hank Aaron went to the majors, he was replaced by a woman who played every bit as good as he could. No fame, no glory. I do have a post, and that post is under Mamie Peanut Johnson, talking about her. Do you realize at one time, in many places, it was against the law for a black and a white person to compete in any competitive experience? Game of checkers, against the law. That is not because the white person is always going to win and they're protecting the feelings of the black person. That's just a hint as to what was going on. When we don't allow people to develop, we harm ourselves. Steel sharpens steel. Steel doesn't sharpen itself cutting marshmallows or tomatoes or whatever may be there. It comes from going against the best. The best team may not have the winning record, because they may by chance have played the worst teams. They don't get any better. But when you go against the tough that bring out the best in you, I think we bring the best out of all. The best out of all. And that's what we need to do. We need to open up. Now, again, I want to mention the fact that there are two groups. What we're seeing in Florida. Do not tell me the truth. I'd rather be ignorant. But I may be uncomfortable if I hear the truth. That does not concern me. I guess it should, but it doesn't. As we open the microphones, those of you that have comments, I encourage you to speak. We have a few people here. I see my friend Marshall James, and I hope that he will speak because he is a person that I greatly admire. Marshall is probably in my age group, but Marshall backs up what he says with action. Talk is very cheap, very cheap. And I sometimes like to find that because we get a chance to see it. We get a chance to talk about it. You know, there is a phrase, I believe, in the Bible. I'm not a theologian, but it says, be hot or cold, lukewarm, and I'll spew you out of my mouth. We can change people. Ray Killen, a person involved in the Mississippi burning and the murder of Cheney, Goodman, and Swarner, made friends with a black man before his death. And it seems as if they had a genuine friendship. A man that goes to those levels and then finds out that he was wrong. This is what we want to do. Give us a chance so that we can talk with people. We can have that conversation. We have often been backed into a corner and are unarmed because we don't know our history. We don't know sources of it. And we are basically left without weapons to us again. The microphones are now open. Marshall, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Abercrombie, how are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing good. We're on the roll.
Yeah, just sitting here listening to you and getting all of the information I can, because I know on next Sunday out at Travel Address Church at 10 o'clock, you're going to bring the message to us. You're going to bring it to us hot and spicy. So that's what we're looking for on next Sunday at 10 o'clock. We'd like for all our friends and listeners to come out to Travel Address for the morning service. Mr. Abercrombie is going to be our keynote speaker for our Black History program. We'd like for you all to come out. All of you.
Now give the address so that people can find us.
Oh, it's off of the Nazareth Church Road. That would be south of Spartanburg. You can go Reba Road, or either you can go 29. And when you come to Nazareth Church Road, take Nazareth Church Road, and it runs across Reba Road, and it runs into Highway 29. Nazareth Church, that's where Travel and Rest Missionary Baptist Church is located at. It has 210 Bruton Road, but it's really on the corner of Bruton Road and Nazareth Church Road. I don't know why they chose to use Bruton Road, because it's not known, but the other road is a road that Nazareth Church Road is one that is famously known. 110 Bruton Road and off of Nazareth Church Road. That'd be east south of Spartanburg.
And would you give us the times again?
Time would be 10 o'clock. Regular morning service would be 10 o'clock. Then we're going to move from there over to the Fellowship Hall at around 12 o'clock. Then we're going to have some other people to give you some black history, local black history, what somebody in their family done or what somebody in the neighborhood did or something that happened down the street or something happened across the hill, some unknown, some little unknown history facts. That's what I'm looking forward to you. To hear about some of our ancestors' names that have never been mentioned since they've been dead.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that, Marshall. And I want to invite people to join us there because our mission is to share the information. And everybody is welcome. Everybody is welcome. Now, remember, we finally uncovered a mass grave in South Carolina to the Massachusetts 55th. The 55th was formed because there were too many black soldiers volunteering for the 54th that they had to form another division. And they fought here in South Carolina, and their bodies were not honored in the least. They dug a big hole and dumped them in. We find that in Florida, Lake Okeechobee, all of the black people were dumped into one hole. The county bought another cemetery for the white victims, and they are buried and identified. The disrespect that's there. I got a call from Marshall, and I was excited because he told me about a cemetery, a black cemetery. And I think it's very near Traveler's Rest. I think it's Traveler's Rest and another church that have it there. We need to respect our ancestors. We need to learn who they are and what they went through. And in most cases, we'll be extremely proud of those people. But we have to learn who they are and make sure that they get the respect that they are due. If most of you were to do research in your family, and my wife has done a lot of research in her family, we find out that a distant relative is Harriet Jacobs. Harriet Jacobs, in the times of slavery, wrote a book. Yes, a black person wrote a book. And we find that there were people willing to pay the price to learn. When we look at Frederick Douglass, we find that he learned to read by trading his lunch to people to help him with first a letter, a word, a whatever. That is the determination that pays off so well. He became nationally known. And incidentally, he is the person that advised do not take this court to the Supreme Court when we talk about Plessy v. Ferguson. This man was a genius. In so many ways, we were able to go out and work on cleaning that cemetery. When we have people that die, they are deserving of respect. We had white people come out and help us clean and reclaim the cemetery. It's not a matter of black or white. It's a matter of right and wrong. If you have slave-owning ancestors in your family, that's fine. I blame that ancestor, not you. But if you are not willing to participate to help me prevent this from happening again, I'm looking at you funny, very, very funny, because all I'm asking you to do is a little something, anything. But to ignore it is to condone it. To ignore it is to condone it. This is one of the reasons that I value Marshall's friendship so much. Greg McKee, my God, did so much to get that cemetery cleared. And that's not a matter of love of one person over another. It's a matter of respect. Our ancestors deserve respect. We need to respect ourselves. How can we respect ourselves when we don't respect our ancestors? This is why I'm elated at the fact that I was asked to come to Traveler's Rest. I enjoy going out there and hope that you will also join us on Sunday at 10 p.m. And I believe that address is for your GPS is 10 Bruton Road. Marshall, should correct
me?
Yes,
210 Bruton Road.
210 Bruton Road. I hope
Bruton.
To see that church just packed because
yes.
They're a good group. Good group of people, and we need it. So
yes.
any other comments, any other questions?
Yes, the Florence Chapel, the graveyard, the cemetery that we were talking about, that's right off the road there at Welford. We will be cleaning up. We're going to make another visit on it on March the 24th, I think it is, on Saturday from 9 until 12. And there are some more things we need to do to make it look like and to upraise some graves and put dirt in and fill them up and all. We'll Greg McKeith and I and others, we will be there with the volunteers, and we would like for some of our listeners to come and join in with us that they may feel what you feel when you helping someone. Those people, our ancestors who's buried there, they don't know anything about it, but I tell you who do. God know about it. He know that you out there helping it with young man out there who helped us one day. He said, you know what? He's a white guy. He said, I'm so guilty of this. So, you know, when I leave here, I'm going by my own parents and relatives' grave and do something in their graveyard because he was a volunteer. And it struck him while we was out there cleaning up the grave, how we have denied and disrespected our ancestors and our elders about not cleaning up our grave. And there are many soldiers, I think 21 or 24 soldiers that's buried in that graveyard. And it used to be a community graveyard. New Trinity didn't have a graveyard when they were burying their people. And some of the other churches didn't have graveyards. But this is a community graveyard. There at Chapel Church are there on Old Spartanburg Road right off of 29 in Welford.
Okay, I appreciate the information, Marshall. And I'm going to tell you one thing that really touched me, and it happened quite some time ago. When I first became interested in this topic of black history, I was in Coloma, El Dorado County, California, the site of Sutter's Mill. And I find out that James Marshall, not Marshall James, James Marshall, the person who discovered gold there, was buried in the city cemetery, as was Pearly Monroe and some other people that I learned who were black. And what impressed me so much is the fact that black people were buried in the city cemetery. And it struck me because when I had left Spartanburg, South Carolina, going to my first permanent job as a chemist, they were not even showing the respect of publishing the obituaries of black people on the obituary page. That made a lasting impression upon me. We need to honor those people. We need to honor all people. I would like you to come out on March 24th, is it? I think it was March 24th.
Yes.
And learn that respect. I did.
Yes,
and, and give back to the community. You know who will benefit from that? You will. And I guarantee it. I'm going to be there on the 24th. I have been there on other occasions when we did this. And it is deeply impactful. I hope that you will mark on your calendars to come out and help us on that particular occasion. So anybody else, that number, I hope that you use it again because we're here every week, 646-668-8217 is the number to call in. And like I said last night, I enjoyed the different opinion that came up. We were able to talk respectfully, although we disagreed, I'm going to give him some information. But this is how our community grows, how we become informed. And I want you as part of that. And to be a part of it, you don't have to be of any particular ethnicity, race, gender, or anything else. Be a human being created by God, willing to help your fellow man. Help yourself. Help the world. Help the next generation coming along. Any other comments? So we will close this out because we've only got 8 minutes scheduled. And I don't just talk just to, hopefully don't talk just to be talking. Any other comments from anybody? And again, if you call in, you don't necessarily have to make comments, questions, suggestions. It allows us to see that you're there. I appreciate all of the listeners, all. And this is how our community grows. This is how we get better. This is how we solve the problem that we are afraid to talk about. And I don't just mean one group. All of us need to learn to settle problems. Any other comments? Otherwise, we will close out.
Yes, one other comment I would like to make. You mentioned Greg McKeese. He is a good friend of mine, and he said that he was going to be at the program on the next Sunday, so the people might be able to meet this white guy. Not only is he a friend of mine, he's a friend of yours. You just don't know it. If you knew him, then you would say the same thing that I am saying. This man is a man of A-C-T-I-O-N. Greg McKee.
I can second that motion.
Beg your pardon?
I said I can second that motion.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, he's the man. He gets things done. How in the world he do it, I don't know, but it is what it is, and he do what he do, and we appreciate him. I do. He's writing a book on my brother and I. We having a book written about our life history and our singing career, and he is the one that want to do the book. So we meet with him. I just left him a few hours ago at his church downtown Greenville. We sang there two or three times a year, and the day was out of time, so we just left Greg McKeith just a little while ago, went out to dinner and ate and talked about the good old days. He's certainly a friend. I'm talking about a friend, not that you know, but know of.
Now, Greg went with me. I was looking for some information on my great uncle, who started a school in Simpsonville. And we believe that it started as one of the,
Rosenwald
School. Yeah. And Rosenwald, we sometimes want to blame other people for everything that happened, but Rosenwald was the president of Sears Roebuck and started over 2,500 schools to educate black people. And I think that the school that my great uncle started. Now he was right there with us as we were starting into the research on that. How good is that? We were meeting. Marshall was with us, and he was going up to Raleigh-Durham area to work on a much larger cemetery that had been located up there. This man works. The people that I like are the people that take, like Marshall said, action. Talk is cheap and sometimes even detrimental because it's not backed up. We are people of action. I want you to invite other people to join us next week, every Sunday at 4 p.m. The program is Did You Know? Success Leaves Footprints. Cover history and get to the basic facts of history. We don't create history. We don't alter history. What we do is make sure the facts are known. We get to the foundation of why. And so with that, we'll be closing out. I want to thank everybody that tuned in, and I want to extend my blessings for a wonderful week and hope that you join us next week at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Pacific, and whatever that translates out to wherever you are. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed, and join us again. Educate yourself. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I will see you Sunday at Traveler's Rest at 110 Bruton, and hope that everybody can join us.